Well, good morning.
Good to see everybody. We're glad you're here.
We have visitors in the audience. Thank you for coming our way. I was studying the passage. We've been doing the persistent widow, and so we had to look at Luke, the 17th chapter. And I thought about this phrase, remember Lot's wife, and I didn't think about where my brother was in his class again this morning. So y'all are going to get a double dose of Lot and of the situation there. But anyway, we're always good to be reminded of that. I found this graphic kind of interesting. You think of a pile of salt with a wedding ring in the middle of it, but it was a tragic occurrence. It's not one that is looked at in some kind of humorous way, but to be understood of how serious the situation was. When I grew up in the little school that I was part of up in the panhandle of Texas, we had 14 people in my graduating class. I started first grade with 7 of them. Because mostly it was ranchers, farmers, people that provided the services for ranchers and farmers that were in that little town, worked at the co-op or wherever, little mercantile store that we had, teachers and others that were part of that. So I grew up with all of those people, most all of those people from the first grade on. And one of the things that we did before we started school, and I don't know if that's the way it was in smaller schools in Arkansas, is that we read the scriptures over the intercom, and it went out into every classroom, every homeroom. Can you imagine that? There was a day, some of y'all are shaking your heads, yes, that it may have happened with you and that prayers were offered. And so the boys that would pick out, they would always pick boys to read. And every once in a while, I would get to do that. You get to go into the superintendent, because it's such a small school. You got to go in the superintendent's office. He controlled all of that, read to everybody. And they always found it funny to read the one passage that has two words, Jesus wept. They would all congratulate one another when they came back, sort of snicker and laugh about the fact that, they read two words, how powerful those words, if they only knew, if they only were the spiritual part of them awake. Can you imagine reading these three words? You just get up and read Luke 17, verse 32. Remember Lot's wife. Think about the power of that in the story that Jesus is telling them there to prepare for. I believe it's about the destruction of Jerusalem. I believe he is telling them there are two great things that you better pay attention to. And it's going to come. The first of them, of course, was Noah. And in the days of Noah, they're going to be eating and drinking and marrying. They're going to have fun. They're going to be people at wedding feasts, and things are going to be going on. In other words, life is going on like it always has. But remember that while they were doing that, Noah entered the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. Then when it tells this story about Sodom and Gomorrah, again, they were selling, planning, eating, drinking. Life is going on as normal. But then when Lot went out from Sodom, fire and sulfur rained from heaven, verse 29, and destroyed them all. And the same phrase is used. And both of those, by the way, folks, were physical destructions. All right? They destroyed all the people on the face of the earth, a physical judgment, destruction of all life. All of the people were destroyed. Sodom and Gomorrah, the same thing. All the people were destroyed. Guess what he's saying is coming at the destruction of Jerusalem? The Jewish people are going to be destroyed. Everything's going to be wiped away. Everything's going to be dissolved as far as the law of Moses is concerned. The worship, the temple's going to be razed to the ground. There's not going to be anything left. Again, he is reminding them of how dangerous the situation is, and that the certainty of the judgment is coming. And then he inserts those words, remember Lot's wife. If you're in Jerusalem in that day, remember that story. And I think of the power of the fact that Jesus reaches back to a story centuries before this. Jesus believed it was real, it was true, because it was real, it is true. It did happen. It tells you something about the inspiration of Scripture, and that Jesus can reach back and say, that event happened. It wasn't make-believe, it wasn't a fairy tale, it was literal, and it happened, because what's going to happen to Jerusalem is not a fairy tale. It's going to literally happen, and he pits or matches a literal thing in the Old Testament to a literal thing that will happen in the New Testament. And we need to hear what he is saying. Remember Lot's wife. Well, how powerful that is when you think about remembering something. My growing up in Texas and remembering the Alamo. Or you, as United States, remember Pearl Harbor. I mean, all you have to say are those words and the vividness of what they mean to us and the power that they carry of what we ought to remember, put together again in our minds and apply it to our day, apply it to our time. Remember Lot's wife. And so what can we remember this morning as we think about her? There are some powerful implications in that very short phrase. First of all, we remember the story, and it was read to you, that she turned around and looked. When the men said, escape for your life, flee, don't look back. And yet she did look back. Because of it, God struck her, and she became a pillar of salt. She perished. May I suggest to you, first of all, even though she was the wife of a righteous man. Again, we spent a lot of time on that this morning in class, but here's that passage out of 2 Peter 2, 7 and 8. And if he rescued righteous Lot, greatly distressed by the sensual conduct of the wicked, for as that righteous man lived among them day after day, he was tormenting his righteous soul over their lawless deeds that he saw and heard. I'm going to tell you, when you read that passage, you get one idea out of it, and that is Lot was righteous. And anybody can talk about the bad judgments he made and all those kinds of things are true. But at the end of the day, Peter says he was a righteous man. He vexed his soul by what he saw. I don't think there's any worry about where Lot is in eternity by what Peter is saying to us. He was a man that stood, he made bad choices, yes, but he stood with God. And it may be that some of the ones that were suggesting this morning, in fact, folks, if you remember, the guys that surrounded the house said, you've been acting like a judge. One of the versions translates it, well, you've been acting like a judge ever since you came in among us. In other words, it may be he was the last light to them that they had, the last and final beckoning that you better come. His sons-in-law wouldn't even listen to him. He was a righteous man. But just because she was married to a righteous man, the same thing you could say about his daughters, just because they were the daughters of a righteous man did not ensure their salvation. Just because she was married to him didn't make her stand in the right place with God. I don't think she's going to be there. She turned around and the final act she committed in life before life was taken from her was to rebel against God, was to do the very thing God said do, not do. Folks, righteous parents will not secure the salvation of sinful children. Just because you do the right thing as a parent does not mean your children are going to choose to do the right thing. Your spouse may not choose to do the right thing. Folks, that whole thing descended on the Jewish people. They believed because they came from Abraham, because they were kin to Abraham. Remember that John the Baptist's other would say, God can raise from these stones those kind of children. You are hating me. This Abraham did not do, he told them on one occasion, because he knew Abraham vitally. He was God in the flesh, and he knew what it was to have faith and follow. And just because we are in a local church of Christ, folks, sometimes I think we think because our pictures are out there on the board or they're in the directory, somehow our ticket is punched to heaven. And the guy that preaches to you this morning could be eternally lost. That's just a fact of the matter. Just because we're all here, just because we're a part of this congregation, because we descended from people that were righteous, I had godly grandparents, just because we are married to somebody doesn't mean that we're going to be saved. It depends on you, individually, what you choose to do and what I choose to do in relationship to what God says. Secondly, she perished even though she was warned of the danger. That passage that is told to us and was read both in the class and in our hearing already this morning is that God, in great mercy because of Abraham, sends angels. And it said that they lingered and that they literally had to grab them by the hand and pull them outside the city walls and say, get to the hill, flee to the hills, because we cannot destroy this city until you're in safety. And you remember Lot reasoned with them a little bit more and said, please don't let me go there. Let me go to this small city. Zoar is titled Little because it was another one of the cities, the five cities of the plains that were going to be destroyed. But Zoar was spared. This one favor, the angel goes in and says, I'll grant to you also. And it says, as the sun arose upon the land, that when Lot entered Zoar, the moment he entered Zoar is when God began to rain sulfur and fire down upon Sodom and Gomorrah, and forever they stand as the emblems of people that have rebelled against God so egregiously that they must be destroyed off of the face of the earth. God warned them. The angel said, flee, do not look back. What is it about us that we will not pay attention to warnings? Pick up a pack of cigarettes and on there the Surgeon General's warning was going to happen to you. I grew up with folks, maybe you did too. I grew up in a little country church, town 15,000 people. And in between services, the guys would go out and smoke on the front. That's how, not that long ago, even among people of the church. And probably you can magnify that many times over in the United States, the churches that did the same. What is there about us? We can read that on a pack of cigarettes and we don't pay attention. We don't think that lung cancer will happen to me. I won't get emphysema. None of that will befall me. I lived in College Station when Hurricane Ike entered the Gulf of Mexico. I never had been in the path of a hurricane, but one of the projection models brought it directly over College Station and Bryant. It turned from us and went up, but we got the side of it. I never had seen that whipping of that. The trees would whip and just unbelievable energy would come. Then it would be calm, and then it would come again, that circular motion that you see in a hurricane. And you have days to prepare for it. Out of Houston, there are those hurricane emblems on the highways that no longer are you have the side coming into Houston that has two lanes or three lanes or four or five or six on a freeway. They're all turned the opposite way. They're made hurricane evacuation routes to get out of town. Sometimes it's unbelievable how congested all of that can get. Hours, sometimes almost into a day, I've had people tell me stories of fleeing from Pasadena, 100 miles to College Station of other hurricanes, and it took them almost a day. They were in a car just to get 100 miles. Well, folks, when people told everybody on the Gulf Coast, this is Bolivar Peninsula, Gilchrist, Texas, they're right there by Houston. At Galveston, all that area that you can imagine. They said to them, if you stay here, you will most certainly die. That's what all of the official warnings were. If you decide to ride out Hurricane Ike, you will die. Guess what happened? There were people that did not pay attention. One lady was neighbors, the last ones to get out, tried to plead with her. Because their cell phones, they were able to still talk to her. She said, I've ridden out Rita. You know, sometimes, yeah, they miss it. It turns, it goes somewhere else. But most of the time, they're pretty close. And they were accurate this time. That monster storm entered, and this lady said, it'll just be like Rita. And she called them. The last thing they said they heard, she said, I think I have made a terrible mistake. They didn't find a lot of bodies. They found her body 8 miles inland. It had been washed. Folks, the tragedy of that is what you see on the pictures behind you. I don't know about that one house. You can see it on the left. There it is in the distance. I guarantee you, I want to find out who that builder is. He's the guy I want. Build my house. But if you look at it real closely, it's damaged too. But man, it must have been made of stuff that cannot be blown away. But everything else, look at all those other pads that are there, concrete pads, and there is nothing left. If you'd have been in that structure, you would have been washed to your death. Why don't we listen? There is something about us that rebels against authority, isn't it? I'm not saying that we are predisposed to do that. That's not the point. I just think that we have battle pride just like Satan had a battle pride. Just like any others that we read in the Old Testament, Nebuchadnezzar and others, that pride, as the proverb says, goes before destruction, or destruction, I'm sorry, goes before pride. You have this attitude that I know more. That is not going to happen to me. Let anyone who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 12. Does that exclude anybody in here this morning? And yet the danger is that I can do exactly the opposite of that. How many times does the Bible say to us, be not deceived? Neither fornicators, adulterers, homosexuals, sodomites, thieves, covetous, will inherit the kingdom of God. But somehow we think we're an exception. Our 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33, be not deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. Why does the Bible have to say to us so many times, be not deceived? Because we do deceive ourselves. And we can be warned again and again and not listen to it. Thirdly, she perished even though she made some effort to be saved. Go back to the Genesis passage with me if you're there and look at verse 16 of the chapter. And it says at verse 16, but he lingered, so the men seized him and his wife and his two daughters by the hand, the Lord being merciful to him. And they brought him out and set him outside the city and said, escape for your life. And then at verse 23, the sun had risen on the earth when Lot came to Zoar, and then the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah, sulfur and fire from the Lord out of heaven, and overthrew those cities and all the valley, all the inhabitants of the cities, and what grew on the ground. She went that far. However far from where they were living to that little city they fled, whatever miles it was for them to get there, she tried that much. But it was useless unless you go all the way. In other words, unless you follow all God says to do. Somewhere in there, she made some effort to do the right thing. But somewhere in there, she turned around and looked back. And it almost seems to be in the recording of this, it's at the end. But Lot's wife behind him looked back and she became a pillar of salt, because apparently the destruction is starting. It didn't start until Lot entered Zoar. She's behind him rather than right with him. But as it begins, she turns and looks and God strikes her. In Luke, the 9th chapter, verse 62, Jesus said to him, no one who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is fit for the kingdom of God. Why is that? Those of you that may have grown up back, way back, plowing behind a mule. I remember talking with Brother May. He was a World War II veteran. He said before the war, we'd plow. And he said, plow behind a mule. That's all I'd see all day. That you had to put the furrow in the ground, and you had to look forward if you were going to plow accurately and not plow ground you'd already plowed. Make sure you kept it where it was. You look straight ahead. Nobody looking behind is fit for anything. My dad would list rows that we would water the crops down, and he always prided himself on. They were as straight as an arrow. If you'd have put a right angle on a field, if you could have done that kind of thing and then looked clear across the field, they were just perfect. Our neighbor behind us, he could care less. They'd be crooked going down the field, but my dad's were just as straight, as we say, as an arrow. When you do that, there's that hood ornament on the middle of the tractor hood, and then there is an arm that goes out, and you're listing the rows, but that arm is making your mark all the way down on that unplowed ground. You turn it around, you've got to put that mark in the middle of the hood and keep it on that line. And if you do, you'll come out as straight. My dad let me begin when I was a teenager. He'd sit in the cab with me by the side of me. And then one time, I'm keeping my eyes on it, and he says, Chuck. And I went and caught myself and went back. And when I turned around, there was this bloop about midway up the field. And he said, never look back. When you set yourself to do God's will, never go back to what we were before. That doesn't mean we're not going to struggle. Sometimes it's two steps forward, one step back, and three steps forward, and two steps back. But we're always going forward, and we're always trying, and we're always making the effort to do it. Agrippa said to what? When Paul's pleading with all of them to obey, you imagine he's going to stand before God in the day of judgment, and he said, you almost persuade me. I love the New King James better than the English Standard. You almost persuade me to become a Christian. Don't you love those new AT&T commercials? I just love them. Just okay is not okay. I love that surgeon that comes in and says, guess who's been reinstated? You know, he's walking in. The nurse asks the or they asked the nurse, said, "What do you know about Dr. So-and-so?" He said, "Yeah, he's okay." They're looking at him, you're startled, said, what do you mean just okay? And he asked him, he said, "Are you scared?" The surgeon does. He said, "Yeah," and he said, "So am I. We'll figure it out." He walks out of the room. Can you imagine if that was a real scene? Just okay is not okay, right? We know that in the real world. Listen to this. Just almost is not okay. When have you ever congratulated somebody on almost winning the race? Slater, you almost got state. No, you did, didn't you? Yeah. I've seen that big honking ring. You almost, it doesn't matter how close you got to it. It almost counts only in horseshoes, I understand. You almost made the sale. You almost won that girl to be married to. Nobody's going to congratulate you for that. You almost had a good marriage. You almost, Mrs. Lott, were saved. It didn't matter unless she went all the way and did what God said to do. Fourthly, she perished even though, think about this, she was in the last mile of the way. That's what I need to hear at the stage of life that I'm in. And I stop and think about some passages that come to mind, like Hebrews 10:36. "For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised." How many people do you know have given up when they've reached the time of life that I have? Or even beyond this? And because of what happens in life, they just let circumstances around them keep them from doing what they know they ought to do and doing what is right. Listen to the text in 1 Kings 11, verse 4. "For when Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart after other gods." Sometimes we look at a young person and say, "Well, I've seen that in a young person." The Bible says you see it in old people too. You see it in old people that may say, I just can't make it to church anymore. I can't get there anymore. Well, there's some truth to that. There comes a time when some of the folks we know right now would give everything to be here. They just physically can't. But even if it hurts and you're still able to get up and you're still able to go to the grocery store and you're still able to go down to Meals on Wheels or wherever they are to pick up lunch, or whatever we can talk about, do you have the strength to come worship God with His people? I'm going to tell you, folks, we can never think we're there until we're there. We can't give up. In 1 Corinthians 9, verse 27, Paul said about himself, "But I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified." Folks, I read that passage quite often. I think about that passage because I'm saying, that's me. I'm preaching to others to do the things I hope will help them in their lives. What if I'm not doing it? What if I become disqualified in the race? It's a race term that we understand, because I don't abide by the rules. I don't do what God said to do. I can fail, and how horrible that'd be to do so in the last mile of the way. And finally, the last point. I want you to think about this. She perished even though she committed but one sin. One sin. Numbers 20 and verse 12, "The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, 'Because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this congregation to the land which I have given them.'" Did you know that Moses, man, we read it this morning in the class. He had to stand there on the top of Mount Pisgah, Mount Nebo, and look at all the land, and God let him see what was going to do. But no, you're not going to set one foot into what was promised to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And Moses should have been the one that brought them over. Because he rebelled against God that one time. Or that unnamed prophet in 1 Corinthians 13, who God said, "When you tell Jeroboam what I want you to tell him, and that there's one day there's going to come a king that's going to, Josiah by name, and he's 350 years in the future, and he's going to dig up all of these false prophets and and burn their bones, and all of this will be destroyed. He said, when you get through telling him that, you go, you get on your donkey and you haul it back to Judah. And don't even go the same way that you came up. And you know the rest of the story, as Paul Arvin says. That man didn't listen to God because he listened to an older prophet that lied to him. And God sent a lion to kill that young prophet. And on the stories could go. Yes, we live under a time of grace, but folks, we need to remember, we better understand, grace is purchased at an awful price. And just because we live in a time of great grace that God has given us, it's not cheap grace. And that God still expects our obedience. I don't know why he breaks out against some people and other people. He didn't kill David. David committed adultery. What did the law of Moses say? Stone him to death. But he said, I put your sin away from you. I don't know why he did that. But listen to me. God has the right to do whatever he wants to in mercy. Here's the deal. God's white hot anger is against every sin. And he has the right to break out against any one of us. Ananias and Sapphira, at any time, if he grants mercy, then it is his prerogative to do so. But you and I need to understand how dangerous sin is. Remember Lot's wife. What a powerful phrase needs to go with us in life. If you're subject to heaven's invitation this morning, Jesus said, he that believes and is baptized shall be saved. He that believes not shall be condemned. If we can help you to do his will, remember Lot's wife. Remember to escape the judgment that's coming. Or if you're a Christian and you walked away from him, you need to come back and ask for the prayers of the church. We beg you to come as together we stand and sing.